I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Habs and Minded.
Hello, hello, hello. And we're back with a very interesting episode. Obviously, we're going to go to who's number 7 on the list of the top 25, under 25. But we're going to go and talk about some of the other prospects that we have spoken about already. And I'm joined by, obviously, Marc-Antoine Louis from... Where is it, Louis?
Levi's.
Levi's. From Ice on the Prize. And... Obviously, since we're talking goalies here, we have to invite former Eyes on the Prize and Eyes on the Prize Alan Ken, which is super exciting because you and I used to be the old guys in the Eyes on the Prize chat.
For the record, I was the old guy and you were the next oldest guy.
Yeah, but we were still the oldest. I mean, like our combined age was probably more than the others combined.
I believe that to be true. And still is, probably.
It's great to have you on, Ken, and we worked a few times together even after you left Ice on the Prize, but you're with InGold Media now?
I am. I'm sort of the guy behind the guy behind the guy and sitting in the background. They don't let me out much because I'm too critical sometimes.
Would that be the guy that paints the helmet or stitches the padding?
No, I'm the guy who says you should probably stitch it that way. Or are you sure? Or afterwards says, a little too busy for me.
Yeah, and obviously for you guys that don't know, Mark, he's a goalie as well and our resident goalie analyst on Ice on the Prize. So I'm joined by the greats and I'm just going to sit here and listen to you guys talk because there is something about goalie development and goalie prospects that is sort of magic.
Well, I believe the official social media term is voodoo, but I don't use that.
Well, you just mentioned before we started here, Ken, there is an invite for the camp as well. Why don't you tell us about him?
Well, so I guess Alexis Gravel, who was in the Blackhawks system and was not signed, is a Team Canada goalie at some point. I think a kid with some nice fundamentals who seems to break down when things sort of go awry. So I think he sets up well. He looks like he's going to be, pretty strong. And then, if the first save doesn't go very cleanly, he tends to sort of revert to a lot of scrambling, which a lot of coaches like, but is something that as you rise through the levels, doesn't really translate very well. So it's an interesting pickup. You know, I think he's, I assume he will be part of the ECHL team if they like him, because I think he's aged out of juniors, right? He's 21.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I think people do think that there's some upside for him. So it's an interesting pickup, and it sort of goes along with the idea that they'll have this ECHL development platform, which they really haven't had. You know, so we were talking briefly beforehand about Michael McNiven, you know, who sort of wandered as a vagabond through the ECHL, you know, wilderness, going from team to team, because the Habs really didn't have their own ECHL affiliate. So I think that's going to be a huge difference for them moving forward. You know, I also think that, you know, it's such a spectacular jersey that it's worth, you know,
The logo of the spectacular is fantastic.
And spectacular. But I think that, you know, so Gravel to me is an interesting pickup. You know, I don't know what his real upside is, but I think it's an interesting pickup in that he's clearly got some fundamental skills, but he's been able to get away with a lot of stuff through the years that obviously the Blackhawks didn't feel that they needed to invest more in him. But I think it's an interesting pickup, because I think a lot of people sort of like his possibilities if he can get some of that sort of reactive play cleaned up.
Mark, to continue this in one way, you were the highest on Joe Verbitek.
Yeah.
In all the rankings, and would you mind giving us the reason why?
Yeah, no problem at all. One of the things is, I actually talked with a couple scouts that I knew from the OHL, and most of them told me that the team he played for was atrocious. Like, he had no defense, he had nothing at all. I went through a little bit of film, I look at him. The thing is, one of the first things you'll see about this guy is, like, he's huge. He's what, 6'6"? He didn't really fill out his frame. I think he's like 190 pounds or something like that. So he's still kind of lanky for his size, but he's gigantuous. Like, he's enormous. He has good potential. I think he's really leaning more on his athleticism more than anything else. So he's really using his body as a big wall right now. But I think if he can just keep building on that and adding a little bit more mobility from post to post, it could be really good.
I found some video of him, and you know, I hadn't seen much of him before, but I know Kat Silverman, who writes with us, is very high on him. But I actually liked him. I think that he looked much more efficient than I was expecting him to be. And we can get into this with Caden, you know, Primo a little bit later. But I'm a big believer in sort of this efficient movement. I think that he's a guy who, he looks huge, he plays huge, but he doesn't really seem to scramble around much. He's very sort of economical in his movements, and very, it has some precision to his game, which to me, I think, you know, again, we'll talk about this as we go on, but precision to me in the movements is one of the things that really gets lost on a lot of these younger guys who can get away with being big or can get away with being super athletes and can stop a lot of pucks while they're playing against people who aren't better than they are. And then as you get into the higher levels, the precision of your movements really, I think, determines what your ceiling can be. And he looked pretty good to me, you know, for a big guy. He really, you know, I agree with you, he was sort of using his body as a wall, but he was getting to the right spot and he wasn't flailing around much. I liked him, actually. So I think that's a nice pickup. And then he's going, what, he's going to be in the queue, correct? So he and Dishow are going to be in the queue.
Dishow is playing in Sweden, actually.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I like Verbitek. I thought, you know, the little bit of tape that I've been able to see on him, I really do like his, I like his upside. You know, I like the way he moves now as a big guy. And I think when you start off with those kind of fundamentals, like you were saying, I think there's a lot of upside when you're that size and you move that efficiently. Mm-hmm. So
Adesov is he's also a big guy, obviously. He hasn't filled out his frame. I think he's filled out a little bit during the pandemic, and not like me around the belly, but rather, you know, with muscles. But
let's not go there.
What strikes me is, and this is one thing that I was told I should look for when evaluating goalies, is how he reacts after a bad goal. And he has a temper, which in some ways is good, but he lashes out after one of those goals where it might be on him, but he rather blames someone else.
That's a dangerous little, that's a dangerous little tendency. You know, I like I said, I haven't seen him enough to know. But you know, that to me is always a problem. You know, I think I never played, so I always take a lot of flack for some of those discussions. But you know, to me, I think every goal can be stopped, and it's not a question that you should be, or that you should hold yourself to the standard of stopping every goal. But I think if you're letting in goals and you don't think that there's anything that you could have done about it, then I think you're really hurting your own development. You know, I think, you know, my thing is, you know, whenever I've talked to young goalies, I always tell them, you know, go back and watch your games and don't just watch the good stuff. You know, watch a goal that happens. See if somebody tipped the puck. See if there was something you could have done differently. See if there's a move that you made, you know, that set things off where it became an unstoppable goal, but it didn't always have to be. You know, I think that's the way that I would always tell these guys to approach it. And so to me, you know, again, not having seen him do that, but if you tell me that, I believe you. And that's a dangerous little precedent for someone, you know, as a goalie. I think if you're going to you better be Henrik Lundqvist or Carey Price before you start lashing out at one of your teammates for something. You know, you can go up and say, hey, listen, can you next time, you know, keep an eye on that guy, or you can instruct them if you see a play that's happening and you want to tell people, hey, you know, they're making this cross ice pass after this play, you know, that kind of stuff is totally fine. Cause if you see the game and you want to explain it, that's great. But hey, you should have stopped that, you know, is I think a very dangerous precedent. And, you know, especially as you move up in skill levels, the guys you're on the ice with aren't going to tolerate that.
Fischer will play in Hockey Allsvenskan, the second division of Swedish hockey. Mark?
One of the few things I would say about that is, like, as a goaltender myself, I do believe that, it is not entirely on yourself, because obviously you're always going to be the last player. So if you don't stop the puck, obviously it's going to go in the mat. But one of the few things is it's a team game, right? So one of the first few things, and instead of blaming others, a part of the blame is on you for sure. But one of the other thing is you should do is like Ken just said, as a goalie, I think we can see the ice really well. We can see what's developing. And if you see some of the plays happening often in front of you, and you see your defense breaking always in the same ways, you can just tell them in a positive way, something like, hey, you should probably like look at this guy or try to cut passes. I think it's easier to try to help your teammates, try to help yourself, and don't just put your like all the blame on yourself, all the blame on others. It's really about just trying to stay strong mentally. It's one of the hardest thing as a goalie, because you know, you spend most of the game by yourself. You don't really talk to anybody really throughout the game. So it's really about just, you know, focusing on one step at a time. Really, always you go with one shot, one stop, and go from there. And yes, sometimes it's gonna go in, obviously, but you know, you have to reset every time a goal go in, and you just have to say, I'm gonna stop the next one, I'm gonna stop the next one, and just work your way from there. So it's one of the few things I really like about some of our prospects that's coming back. Some of them have a really, really calm demeanor and have a really good attitude when they go, and I love it. So it's always a little bit tricky when I hear some goalies really explosives, or they're just really, they'll go a bit aggressive in the way they let a goal in. I'm like, yeah, that's just not the correct way to approach it, because you're going to get scored on, obviously, and you're going to get scored on a lot. Some games are going to be super great. You might get a shutout, super good, but you know, sometimes you might let 5, 6, 7 goals in, and you just have to be able to reset from that and be able to move on from that and learn from it, especially.
Yeah, one of the things that I always tell, you know, my daughter who coaches a little bit now, and you know, one of the things that I used to tell her, as well as some of the other kids that we've, you know, that I've run into in camps and stuff, is I say, listen, you know, there are going to be days where you play great and you lose, mm-hmm. and there are going to be days where you play awfully and you win, and you just learn from everything. But you know, you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as you think you are. But I think among the most important things is to really understand what happens. You know, if you have access to video, go look at the video, see what happened. And that goes to not just what you did, but what everybody else did, you know, so you can prepare for that. Because like I said, you know, sometimes goals go in and they're not your fault. Sometimes they do and they don't think that you are, but they actually are. And you know, that's why I don't like to lash out at anybody, or I don't like to tell anybody, you know, to have a problem with something that your teammate did, because you may not know exactly what happened, because hockey is a ridiculously fast game and crazy stuff happens. And until you go back and watch the video and see what happened and how it happened, you don't really know. You know, and so there's nothing worse than a goalie who gets blamed for a shot that deflects off of a, you know, that changes angle off of somebody's stick that nobody saw, you know. And at the same time, there's nothing worse than being a defenseman who gets yelled at for something that wasn't your fault, you know, but the goalie didn't realize it because they couldn't see it. So I, again, that's the thing. And that was the biggest thing I always used to say was, you know, listen, there's going to be days where you play great, you know, and you just lose. And there's going to be days where you stink and your team bails you out and you're all in it together. And that's how it goes.
Sounds like work to me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Some days I'm sure it is, Mark, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Some days you know, you're going to do the best, you know, you're going to play out of your mind. You're going to be making crazy saves. And even the opponent's going to be like, wow, you're playing super well. And you're still going to lose. Yep. And it's going to suck. And it's going to be like, well, I did my job. Like, I can't score goals for you guys, but I can save some. But, you know, at one point, you know, as Ken just said, sometimes you join. The puck slug is not going to go your way and it's just going to suck. And sometimes, you know, posts are going to save everything for me and I'm going to be feeling terrible and we're still going to win. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, it happens. I'm like, okay.
Hey, if it hit the post, you did your job.
Oh, yeah. No. I love my posts. They're really great. I love them. I tell them every day. Like, you guys do a great job.
I always love that on the game cast when they go, oh, you know, he beat him, but he hit the post. Well, no, he hit the post. He didn't beat him.
You forced him to shoot there.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he beat him, it would have been in.
You're cutting angles. You're forcing them to shoot wide.
Yeah. No. I think there is this Swedish goalie that used to say that the posts were his best friends. And also, the more he practiced, the more they hit the post.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, right. So he was like, but I'm sure it's only luck. I think
that's right. It's like the post. You never apologize for a post and you never apologize for a shot off the shaft of your stick.
You practice that. One of the three big guys, because they're really big, all these three goalies, is Jakub Dobeš or Dobes. I don't know how to pronounce it properly, but he's one of those guys as well that they have taken a chance on, which is, you know, a big goalie, 6 foot something, and under development, really.
Yeah. I would say underdeveloped, raw would be a good way to describe him. You know, I think he's one of those topics, and, you know, Mark can certainly disagree with me on this, but I think he's one of those guys that NHL drafting scouts love because they think that they're underdeveloped and raw talent, and therefore they can mold them into something they want, and they don't come in with sort of this predisposed technical idea in their head. But, you know, you watch him play, and he's a huge guy, and he's wild all over the place, as far as I could tell.
So he's not economical with his movements?
No, he did not strike me as economically. He struck me as a raw athlete who is a pretty good, you know, skater, obviously a good hockey player, you know, very big, very sort of exaggerated in his movements. So, you know, a shot will go a little bit wide and he'll be, you know, a full stride outside the crease and then he'll be diving back to get the next one. And he diving forward a lot to cover pucks. You know, I think it's something that, again, big guys can get away with. I don't know what will happen with him. I believe he's going to Ohio State. Is that correct?
So,
you know, I don't know what will happen to him in the NCAA where you play, you know, two games a weekend and it's 35 games a year. And, you know, there's a lot of practice in between. You know, I don't know that he gets more economical in that setting.
Depends on the subject he's taking.
But yeah, exactly. Right. Yes. Macro or micro. I would be the micro guy. So yeah, no. So I think for him, you know, he's a project to me. You know, he's a guy who, you know, you hope you can kind of rein in. He's obviously big. He's obviously very talented. You know, you don't get to that level without being talented. And he stops a lot of pucks, but he does it in a way that is just, you know, a little bit wild is the wrong word, but very, very raw technically. I think, you know, I think he just needs a lot of sort of fundamental reining in before he becomes a legitimate high-level guy. That's just my take on him, on the limited amount that I've seen. But, you know, it was a lot of sort of, you know, spectacular looking stuff, which just won't fly at any level other than about where he is now.
No, yeah, I tend to agree with you, kind of. I think the last three goalies that they took, well, Dobies, Verbetic, and Dekal, all three of them are like really huge goalies. They're big guys, they have a lot of strength, they're really athletic, but most of them don't have a clean game in a sense. They have raw potential, and I agree on that with you. Is like, I feel like people are scouting them like, oh, they're big guys. They, you know, they have a good set of tools. If we can keep, you know, polishing them and molding them, they'll get better. I think it could be done to some degree, but you know, some of them have, you know, in their plays, they have some flaws, and I'm not sure how much they can be removed. So we'll see through times, but you know, out of the last three we took, I think Verbetic for me seems to be the best bet.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Yeah,
Dobies is like, I don't know, as you said, like he has some fundamental that are really good, or you know, he does well a couple things, but overall when I look at him sometimes I just feel it's awkward. It's a little bit messy, yeah, the way he goes, and I'm like, how much can this be improved? And you're right, he's going to Ohio State in the NCAA, so hopefully that's going to help him a bit, because he was in the what was it, USHL, and that level of competition is so much different than the yes. NCAA.
Yeah,
there's a huge step between both of them, so I kind of want to see how it's going to go the first year. If he does well, maybe there's something there, but you know, I think if you were asking me to bet out of those three goalies, I would probably bet on Drew Verbetic to have somewhat of a decent career out of
those. Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I don't know what his ceiling would be, but I like his upside among all the guys. You know, I think it's one of those, I've never quite understood the obsession with getting guys who don't have sort of strong technical fundamentals. You know, it's like a bad thing that they have these technical fundamentals. And to me, you know, you can always teach somebody to be, you can always, if someone's fast, you can always teach them to be faster. If someone is technically proficient, you can always add skills on top. And but if they don't have that fundamental base, you have to teach them that and then re-add all the things that you've now taught them not to do. And I think it just becomes very hard, and you get so many guys that just get lost in the middle, you know, where they sort of grew up as these athletic guys who got away with a lot of stuff because they were just better than everybody. You know, they were rewarded for that along the way. Then they reach a level where they're not getting rewarded for it, and suddenly everybody says, well, what's wrong with them? And then they have to rebuild their games, you know, and that takes time, you know, and it's interesting, you know, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You know, I think a lot of people thought, well, you know, Thatcher Demko out in Vancouver is going to be, you know, maybe a bust. But then all of a sudden he kind of reined it in and figured it out. And now he's just gangbusters. So, yeah,
and you know, then we have the other really gangbuster that struggles internationally. But God, he looks great in SKA, doesn't he? Askarov.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, the Russian guys are a lot like that. Sergei Bobrovsky was like that when he came to the Flyers. You know, he was just all, you know, he was an athletic freak, you know, but his game was just completely raw. And they brought him in and he started, and you know, and then all of a sudden they traded him and he went to Ian Clark, you know, who kind of calmed him down a little, and he was terrific, you know, and he has a tendency still to become a little overactive. You know, and it hurts him as he, you know, and he's a two-time Vezina winner, and he still reverts sometimes to sort of the older instincts. So I think when these guys get these instincts really ingrained in them early, it's very hard to change how they approach the game. And that's really the difference. You know, I've never understood that, why the NHL level wants guys who, you know, I can't believe that at that level that they don't really understand that someone who is technically proficient is a terrific athlete. Like, you know, like you don't get to that level and have the kind of skill set that some of these people have without being athletic. And just because you're not diving from post to post and you know, making spectacular saves doesn't mean you're not athletic, and doesn't mean that, you know, you can't become that much better and that much faster than you look, because chances are you probably are faster than you look and you don't need to play that fast. So if you have speed in reserve, that's, I think, what gets you to the next, that's what really takes you to the next level and lets you succeed, is when you can do everything well and you still have an upside. as opposed to, you know, looking spectacular, but not necessarily, you know, that doesn't translate. You know, NHL guys don't miss the net when you're flying at them. You know,
I usually compare it to Man United, the goalies there with Schmeichel and then Van der Sar, that was these kind of players that were stable. They know what to do. They were sound. And then they bring in Barthez that, you know, he can make the spectacular saves, but he can also fumble in a ball from anywhere on the pitch.
Yeah, well, that's true. And usually in hockey, those guys, those mistakes don't get punished until they get to a much higher level. Yep. You know, coaches don't bench guys who they think are making spectacular saves if you lose 4-3.
Yeah.
You know, they will always sort of gravitate towards those players, you know, because they do spectacular things and they don't necessarily understand that the guy getting hit in the chest 30 times a game isn't because they're shooting at his chest. It's because his chest is there. So,
Indeed. Going on, Mark, Michael McNiven, we already mentioned him and how beneficial it would have been to have Trois Rivières earlier in the development program. Is he lost for the Canadiens or where is he really?
Actually, I feel like McNiven has more potential, more untapped potential than we actually know of. I feel like because he's been shuttled between the ECHL and the AHL and losing time, he kind of became a little bit lost or people forgot about him. But when you watch him play, he has some really good tools and he can actually play really, really well. And I feel like he's probably not going to be an NHL star. Some people are always expecting that out of goalies. I don't think so. I think he could be a decent backup at some point, hopefully at the NHL level or a good starter in the AHL. But I feel like he is underestimated and underappreciated by a lot of people just because of his situation, just because he became a little bit that one forgotten prospect that we had. And obviously, Kaden Primeau is, you know, the big boy, the guy that everybody wants to succeed and to get to the NHL, which is 100% fine. But I feel like people are kind of sleeping on him, on McNiven, a little bit, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I think he plays a nice game. You know, he's 24. He's been through a lot of stuff already. You know, he's survived it all so far. You know, he plays well. He's pretty solid fundamentally. He doesn't do anything crazy. And he's learned to kind of ride with what happens, which I think is a very important, you know, mental perspective for somebody in his position. You know, and he's the kind of guy who I think is, you know, every team needs, I think at this point in the NHL, you need three or four guys. You know, you need your horse, you need your backup, you need your sort of, you know, heir apparent and you know, who can play a little bit. And then I think you need another guy, because when people get hurt, you need somebody who can step in. You know, you need a guy who can play the first or second night of a back-to-back. And, you know, a guy like McNiven, sort of, that's to me sort of where he projects. You know, at 24, I'm not sure that he's going to make the leap to the NHL at some point, you know, but I do agree with you that he could be a pretty nice backup at some point. But at worst, you know, which is not a bad place to be if you're a goalie in professional life, you know, if you're a starter in the AHL and you can spot start in the NHL, you can have a long career doing that in a lot of places.
Or go to Europe, because that opens that door as well.
Yeah, I always forget about that. You know, what a nice life. You know, go to Europe, play some hockey, you know,
live in cool places.
No, I mean, that's a nice life. If you've, you know, if you can make a living as a professional goalie, you know, that's a nice life. But I agree with you, Mark. I think McNiven has more to show us, you know, and it's a shame that he sort of lost all those years kind of, you know, and, you know, he was sort of back. He was behind Lindgren and he just didn't have really a place to develop and play. You know, and I think, again, I don't think you'll see that again in this prospect system with, you know, with the Trois Rivières team. I think that'll be a very nice addition for them. And hopefully they learn their lesson on McNiven, because I do think that he had more to show, and hopefully he will.
Obviously, we're here to talk about Kaden Primeau.
Here we go.
Half an hour with other things.
It was quite the prologue there.
Yeah.
I don't shut up. Yeah, that's why they don't let me out of in goal much.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it, because, you can always pause a podcast and come back to it the day after or on your way back from work as well. But Kaden Primeau, number 7 on the list. Why is he number 7 on the list?
Well, I'm going to let Mark start because I'm interested to hear what he has to say because I'm not sure I have the best take on Caden, so or the most popular take on Caden. So let's see what you say.
I'm going to be the positive guy here. I really like Kenneth Primo's game. Let's get one thing out of the way. He has not been consistent the last few years. That I completely agree. But one of the first few things I really like about him is obviously he has size. He's not the biggest guy, but he's like 6'3", I believe. 6'3", 6'4". So he's a big guy. One of the best things about him is his cool attitude. He doesn't look like he's panicking whenever he makes a stop. He's able to do crazy stops whenever he needs due to his athleticism in general. But he has a really good mindset. He has a really strong mental game. He doesn't get fazed by getting scored on a lot. And God, it happened quite a few times in the AHL. But he still manages to stay in the game, be strong. He has some really good movement from post to post. He has some good foundational training in itself. Obviously, my biggest criticism against him would be just that sometimes he plays super well, like incredible, and then you get some really crappy games. And one of the few things I would like to see from him more often is just more consistency, just being good enough to keep stopping pucks often and the same way. But honestly, I see him as a starter, and give him a couple years though. I think he still need to round out his game, get a few more shots. I know Stephen Waite had asked him to play, I think, 150 games in the AHL, and obviously with last year he couldn't do that. I think he played like maybe 30-20, I don't remember, but he's gonna need a little more time in the AHL. But I feel like if he keeps practicing, if he keeps getting the reps in and keeps, polishing his game, he has some real tools that could get him to the NHL. Thing is, he needs to show a bit more efforts and his consistency. But that's my point of view.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you fundamentally. I think Caden is a really, really interesting test case a little bit, in the sense that, he's actually from near me. I didn't actually know him growing up, but I knew a couple of kids who played with him and his brother. If your name is Primo in America, in American hockey, and you are good, you will get every possible advantage that there is. And this is one of these developmental things that I think is a little bit different in some other places. He was always on a good team. I shouldn't say that. I didn't really see his teams play, but I know the environment in which he grew up. Caden Primo never had to worry about whether he was going to have a spot on a team or whether, a bad game was going to cost him, playing time growing up. Then he goes to the USHL, but he's already committed to Northeastern, and then he goes to Northeastern and they're pretty good. And, he's a very good goalie. I don't know how much, and I think he's worked hard on his craft. I think it is an interesting mindset to develop the way he has, where essentially he's always been sort of the anointed one. Everybody knew who he was. Everybody knew where he was going. There were teams that were making room for him to play. I saw him play when he was 18, actually, in Philly in his draft year in the prospects game. And I thought he was very good. I thought he had some odd little sort of idiosyncrasies, which I think he's fixed since then. He had this sort of tendency to kind of reset his pads a little bit, do a little chest bump, which is fine, except that he would do it sometimes when the puck was like in the circle, being contested. And it kind of struck me as odd.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, I was like, maybe be ready, dude. But, but in that game, I sort of noticed some of the stuff that I still see with him, and that, he would make a save and he would be leaning a little bit. He would make a save and there would be a rebound, but he would hold his position from the first save he made until, for like a split second, and then go find the rebound. It struck me as a little bit strange, and now I've watched him over the years, and I think he's a very interesting guy. He's big enough. He's very fast. He's very fundamentally sound. moving and reading the play. You know, he's had a ton of experience and he comes from a family of hockey players, and you know, he can really, he's a terrific instinctual hockey player, you know, instinctive hockey player. He reads the play well. He's rarely out of position. He's rarely really, you know, behind a cross ice pass. You know, he gets there. That's why he can make these spectacular saves, which he really does. And he really does well. And he makes a lot of first saves very well. You know, my issue with him is a very subtle one. And that is that I think that his positioning is very strong, but his body control is a little off. So he will often arrive at a position and make a save, but the puck will kind of either sneak through him or will bounce off him in a slightly weird direction, and he's not quite square. You know, it's like he gets there, he's there, and when he drops, his body twists a little bit. You know, he's good with his glove, he's good with his blocker, but when the puck hits him and he gets a rebound, he's not always sure where it's going to go. And I think a lot of these guys at the higher level, you know, the puck hits you, you kind of know where it's going. You know where the shot's going, you know the angle's coming from. If nobody tips that shot, you have a sense of where that rebound's going to go. And I think he is not always sure where it's going to go after it hits him. And as a result, you know, he's a little bit slow to react to the rebounds. Now, he's very fast. So I had this discussion at one point with the InGoal Media folks where, you know, I said, look, he's fast, but he's not necessarily quick. So, you know, he will make a save and there'll be a rebound and he'll find it and then he'll do something very spectacular to get there. But in the NHL, that doesn't necessarily work. You know, you got to know where that rebound's going to be. And if you don't know where it's going to be, you got to be looking for it right away. You know, I've never felt like he's a guy who has his head on a swivel once the puck hits him. You know, he's very sort of first save committed, which a lot of younger goalies are because, you know, let's be honest, they're not playing against guys who are better than they are for a lot of the time, especially if you're Caden Primo. You know, you're on good teams and you're playing against good players and you've had a lot of experience and you've had a lot of coaching and a lot of technique and you're very good. You know, this is not to say he isn't very good, because he is. You know, but I think that he has risen to a level that, you know, it's hard to say. I don't know how to say this without sounding like it's sort of, you know, a little snarky, but you know, if his name wasn't Primo, he'd probably be at this level too, but it wouldn't have been as easy for him. You know, I think there would have been a little bit more testing along the way. You know, you don't necessarily go, you know, he did well at Northeastern, but it wasn't like he was lights out. You know, I mean, he got awards. Yes, he did. But they were also a very good team. You know, he played in the USHL, which is crazy, you know, crazy level hockey. But it didn't, you know, but he wasn't putting up like a 960 save percentage. You know, it wasn't, you know, for the amount of hype, you know, look, he was the seventh round draft pick. He wasn't a first round draft pick. So, you know, I think that there are some things about him that I think if his name wasn't Primo might have been nitpicked a little bit more, but because of who he is and where he comes from, it wasn't. And now I think he's at the level where that sort of stuff is being exposed. So, you know, in the NCAAs, it wasn't exposed really, you know, once in a, you know, in the NCAA hockey also, you know, you're playing against some teams that aren't that great every, you know, it's not like every game is against Wisconsin, you know, and Cole Caulfield, you know, so you can put up some numbers without really being too, you know, without being challenged is the wrong word, but you're not going to be under siege if you're playing in a good NCAA team. So I think that, you know, for him to go from the NCAA right to the AHL, you know, it happens. You know, I'm not sure that if his name wasn't Primo, that would have happened for him. And I think for him, in a sense, that may hold him back a little bit now. I think he needs experience playing against players that are better than him in concentration. So not just one guy on the other team, but a whole team full of guys, you know, who don't miss the net, you know, who don't, you know, have their sticks on the ice when there's a rebound in the crease. You know, I think that's the kind of subtle stuff that he needs to be exposed to. You know, I would have loved to have seen him, you know, go play in Europe for a year or something like that, rather than the NCAA. Really go play against men somewhere, you know, because I think he's very good at making first saves. I think he's very good at making spectacular recovery saves, and he's very good at making spectacular first saves on difficult plays. But I think that when there's traffic and when the puck is deflected, his body control is just a little bit off and the puck goes in funny places. And sometimes they'll sneak through him, or sometimes they'll go around him, or sometimes it's just a rebound and then there's a scramble and then people score. And he's the kind of guy who he'll face 35 shots and he'll look like he's playing great. And then you look up at the scoreboard at the end of the game and you lost 3-2. And you can't really figure out what happened. And to me, that's kind of where he is. And I think that's an interesting, that's why I say it's an interesting test case. And sorry, I'm sort of babbling on here because I find him fascinating. You know, where he does so many things so well, but he has these couple of little fundamental sort of imprecisions that in the NHL is what separates you from, you know, at the NHL level, it's what separates you from the longtime starter to the backup to the guy who can't quite get there. You know, he's putting up what, like 9-10 save percentages in the AHL. And I think that's why. It's not because he gives up bad goals. It's because he gives up goals that pros will score and the people he's played up until in this point really haven't. You know, the puck slips through him because the shot's a little harder. So if he's off a little bit or his body is angled a little bit and he thinks he's got it in the crease of his arm, the shot is that much harder and it just sneaks through. You know, I think that's the kind of thing that he's got to combat. And I think that's a very subtle thing that is hard to combat. You know, at this point, he's got a lot of instincts baked in. You know, he's played a lot of hockey with a lot of good results. And so I think that's the kind of thing where he doesn't need, it's not really fundamental work as much as it's really just a precision in movement that I think really is what he needs to cement him as kind of the heir apparent. You know, that's what everybody's seeing him as the heir apparent. And so when you judge him against that standard, I don't think he's quite there. I think that may lead to some of the inconsistencies that Mark sees. You know, some days you're going to be a little bit more off than others. Some days those shots that, you know, kind of squeak through you don't squeak through you. You know, like, I don't think he's ever going to be one of these guys where, you know, he gives up 6 goals a game and you go, wow, the guy can't play. I mean, he's not that. You know, he's a terrific goalie. But at the same time, I don't think he's at the level where you can say, you know what, we should have let Carey Price go to the Kraken and he can play. You know, I don't think he's there yet. You know, and sorry, that was a long rambling explanation, but I think, you know, I find him fascinating.
Minivan_dad at Twitter, if you want to keep that conversation going.
Yeah, come at me.
Yeah, no, but it's really interesting. And for me, that is not really a goalie aficionado. I mean, like, I like goalies. Obviously, I grew up watching Tretiak, so I love goalies. Yeah. But on the other hand, you see so much more, both of you, that I don't even register. So it's really good and cool to listen to you guys. Mark, you want to add?
I love the minutia. I love the minutia. I love the way I love looking at which edge they used and that kind of stuff.
Mark, you want to add to that?
No, but the thing is, I think Ken pretty much laid it out. I think one of the first few things we can realize about Caden Primo is that if he was not named Primo, he would never have been taken in the 7th round. I know they did like a favor to his dad by taking him. I think they actually swapped with the Flyers.
They did.
The
Flyers, yep.
And they took him. So I kind of see that, you know, he has, you know, hockey blood. He's like royalty in some ways. And I 100% agree that he had a really easier path than most goalies growing up because he just had all of that baking to him from a young age and, you know, being able to see pros, seeing like being a cranks with good players. And I think.
Right. And that's not to say that he wouldn't have had, you know, it's not to say that he got that because of his name. He was very good, you know.
He's still very good, but I think he got it easier because of his name.
Correct. I don't want anybody to misunderstand that. You know, I think that his name means that if you're good, you're going to get every opportunity. If you're not good, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you could be named Gretzky if you don't play the game right.
Well, we got a Tretiak in Schalke now, so you know that's a name to live up to.
Sorry, go ahead. I interrupted you, Mark.
No, sorry
about that.
Basically, I agree with most of what you said. I think when I say like sometimes he has bad games, I think like he let in some goals that are questionable, because you'd be like, well, from the way he plays, he should be able to stop that. You like, you look at him, you're like, he has everything right. But I do think you put your finger on the right thing, that maybe the way he moves his body is not completely right, because I feel like sometimes, you know, those goals that gets in, you're like, he should have stopped that. Not because it's an easy shot or anything of the sort, just because the way he plays so well, he plays so clean, and he has that calm and cool demeanor. You're like, oh, he should be able to get that. And sometimes, yeah, it just squeaked in, and you're like, oh, okay. And I looked at his stats in the NCAA, he had some incredible stats, but I think he also played with like stacked teams, like really, really, really good teams in Northeastern. And from there, he played really well. He had two games in 2019, 2020 with the Montreal Canadiens. He put up like a 931 save percentage. He did really well. And then he got to the DHL level, where he started to see some cracks in this. And I think it's going to be these next few years are going to be break or make years, in the sense that if he can clean up that part of his game and he can actually start rising above that, I think he's going to be able to become a really, really great player. But if he doesn't, that's where you're like, oh, well, you know, people have been calling him the heir apparent for quite a few years now. And people are putting a lot of pressure and hoping this kid's going to become that next natural starter. So you're kind of hoping it goes well. But at the same time, you know, we'll have to see.
Is he ready to pick off Allen next year? Because that is the big question, right?
Oh, God, no. I hope not. Not for the kid. That would be rough for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Caden, again, I think he's going to get every opportunity also. You know, I think that's also part of what's going to happen with him, is that he will get it. They've invested a lot in him. He's going to get the opportunity to show what he can do and to show how he can develop. You know, he will have a fairly long leash compared to other goalies, I think, unless he, you know, but he's shown he can do it. Now, I think if you go back and you look at like his first couple of games with the Canadiens, you know, you see those holes, you know, that's how they, you know, you go, wow, he really played well, but they lost, you know, but he let in three, you know, and as he gets pros, and it wasn't like he looked like he didn't belong. And in fact, you go back and you look at those games, it's like, well, okay, he could have actually stopped that one. He could have actually stopped that one. God, they could have won that game. Wouldn't that have been cool? You know, and I think that's what you're going to be faced with a lot with him is, wow, he really looked great.
Indeed.
You know, I think.
Yeah, come on.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. Indeed. And we're here with, obviously, Ken Bernberger. And you find him at minivan_dad on Twitter. You find him on InGoal Media and minivandad.net. Great thing, right? You're going to start writing there again.
I'm going to start writing. And you can see my golf minutia book, too. Yeah. How to play golf six times a year.
And then obviously you're going to keep riding for Ice on the Price when we ask you. We know
that. Oh, I would love to.
We have also been joined by Marc-Antoine Levi from Ice on the Price. You find him at Antoine Levi at Twitter as well. So I'm going to add it into the article. So be sure to follow them. They're really knowledgeable guys that you heard when it comes to hockey goalies. Thank you guys for joining us, because it's been an enlightenment.
My pleasure for the old folks.
Thank you guys. It was a pleasure.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.